These are fun, off-the-cuff discussions on movies and streaming series, both new and old.
Together, we'll attempt to bridge the gap between Hollywood industry insider and the casual viewer.
This is Alec.
And I'm Ben.
And you're listening to the Cinema A to B podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another new episode of Cinema A to B. Alec, today we have another listener request. Mm-hmm. This is from Amy, my brother-in-law Cameron's girlfriend. And so she made the request for this. It's The Big Lebowski, the Coen Brothers comedy from 1998. So yeah, thanks to Amy. Shout out to Cameron for suggesting this. Sorry, it took us a little longer to get to it than maybe I would intended, but yeah, man, let's kick it off on this delightful comedy from the late 90s.
It is a delightful comedy. Now, full disclosure, I did not like it the first time I watched it.
Really?
No, I was not a fan. I watched it and it was, I don't know if I was like a weird place in my life or just wasn't interested in it. I mean, I saw it in video, DVD or whatever. I did not see this in the theater. And I was not a big Coen Brothers fan at all. Uh-huh. Like I had watched Hudsucker Proxy and was like, I think it's just something that grew on me. But I'm going to tell you, like, so many people love this movie that I watched it multiple times. And I would even say, like, there were times like you and I knew each other and we would watch it. And I was still like, all right, we'll just watch Big Lebowski. It's not that funny. But I'm going to just get through it because people like it. And maybe I'll like it. And as I've progressed and matured and as I've kind of gotten a little bit more appreciation of certain things, I think I've gotten to not understand the Coen Brothers, but I think I've gotten a better appreciation for it because it started to really go like No Country for Old Men is fantastic. Burn After Reading is I love. Like I went back and watched Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Really good. I've even gone back and watched Hudsucker Proxy and enjoy it. And kind of, especially after like No Country and Burn After Reading, I kind of, after seeing those and kind of getting into this mindset of Coen Brothers, rewatching The Big Lebowski was enjoyable and was fun. And I'm going to tell you, I literally just watched this today just to kind of refresh because it's been, probably a good several years since I saw it. I'm by myself watching this and just laughing out loud almost the entire time. Like, this is an absolutely hilarious movie. And I'm thinking to myself, not only has my appreciation for this movie grown, but I'm thinking to myself as I'm watching this, like, is this my favorite comedy? Like I don't know if I can say that, but like, it's in the running. Like, I would have told you, like, something like Tommy Boy was one of my favorite comedies. Like, those, you know, Fletch, like, that stuff is really funny. But like, I was busting out laughing so much. I was like, this has got to be in the running. They're like, this, you know, give another, you know, 5-10 years, maybe this takes the top spot as my favorite comedy. But I digress. There's such great stuff in this film. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And we'll get to all of that. My struggle was I could not remember the first time I ever saw this.
Okay.
It had to have been in college.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm 99% sure.
Was it the TV version?
No.
Or did you just keep the sound down really low?
No, somebody had it on. Yeah, somebody had it on DVD. There were some really, really good kind of under the radar late 90s movies that made their way into our viewing catalog in undergrad. And this was one of them. And I don't really know if I fully understood what I was watching the first time I watched it. But I was definitely laughing. Some of the absurdist humor is right up my alley. It's exactly what gets me going. And then you talk about quotable. I mean, the thing just lives on through those of us that have seen it from bang, 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 quote after quote after quote. It's infinitely rewatchable for me. It's been longer since I've seen it. I think probably at least in the last 6 or 8 months, I've probably watched, I'm not going to say all of it. It probably came on something. And it's one of those, like we've mentioned some movies in the past on the podcast that when they come on,
you just got to watch it.
Even on cable, even though I have access to watch this in much better quality without any TV edits, but if it comes up on YouTube TV on some other cable channel, I'll sit down and watch at least 20 or 30 minutes of it. If not, just pick up where I am right then and there and just finish the dang thing.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter where. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. If you've seen it like twice, it's really easy to follow. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy to know exactly where you are in the story.
Yeah.
And your brain will just fill in the gaps. Oh, yeah, we're here.
Though I totally forgot, like, it just, because it's so quick. But I've totally forgot that it opens up with that the Strangers music, Sam Elliott's, and you're like, yes, around like Dust Bowl or whatever. And you're kind of like, and I was like, I totally forgot this is how it opens. Like, I'm thinking to yourself, if you didn't know anything about the film, you're going into this, you go into the scene of them going like up the kind of like the hill right over, like right before you get to Los Angeles. But all you see is like tumbleweeds and dirt and all this stuff. And you get this kind of cowboy music. You're like, what movie am I watching? And all of a sudden opens up to, you know, essentially Los Angeles. And then of course you go to Ralph's, which, you know, is a LA staple. So you got to go to Ralph's when you're in LA, yeah, you know,
absolutely.
And write a check for 96 cents or 69 cents. I think it was 65 cents, something along those lines. Oh, that always cracked me up that he wrote a check. It was like, put the zero dot and then like 65 cents. I was like, oh, just the jokes.
Yeah. The tone set with Elliot.
Yeah.
And then obviously he gets to close it, which is a great line. I'm paraphrasing where he's just, you know, like that he takes comfort in that, that the dude abides. Yeah.
This is the
champion film for slackers everywhere.
Hey man, it's from the Bible, buddy. I mean, not, you know, the earth abides, but you know, hey, just,
yeah,
the dude abides. There we go. You know, he's just following scripture. That's what it is. You know, this is a, you know, there's not a lot of religious overtones, but this is very much following, you know, I'm just kidding. I digress. Anyway, but yeah.
So this movie follows like the formula for any really a great film. And I don't know that it was recognized as like a truly great piece of cinema when it came out. I don't even know how they marketed this, you know, because it's a relatively dark crime film, but then it's also comedy. But it's less, you know, it's got less polish on it than like a Tarantino film. But I find it much funnier than Tarantino.
Yeah.
It's less violent, but it's, I think what it lacks in the kind of shock value violence, it more than makes up for with its comedy. But it still feels like it's kind of cut out of the same cloth in a lot of ways, of just as a kind of the seedier underbelly of LA.
Okay.
With something like along the lines of, you know, Pulp Fiction or.
Yeah.
But it doesn't ever really get that dark. It doesn't really allow itself to. In fact, the Coens get darker, and there's moments in Burn After Reading that are darker than anything in The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
But
Fargo.
Yeah. Maybe. Oh, especially Fargo. Yeah. But you go down through this cast and it's just wild.
And some of them only have moments of screen time, but steal the show and are just absolutely amazing.
If you want more proof of what kind of chameleon the late Philip Seymour Hoffman was,
oh my goodness, as Brand,
his ability to just play the straight laced, effortlessly play the straight laced, like, you know, personal assistant to
does it so well too.
He does. He had that unique ability to blend into any role he was in. It's astounding. So, and he's not, obviously he's very minor,
but he plays that kind of semi slimy personal assistant who's kind of just looking out for his boss, but also kind of scared of his boss, but looking down on the dude, but yet calling him the dude, unlike everybody, you know, else who has some type of level of class that calls him Lebowski. And he's like, no, I'm not Lebowski, I'm the dude. But yet Brandt actually calls him the dude, which is I always thought was, nice.
Yeah, it is.
One of the few.
Yeah, he's fairly, he's got a cordial nature to him.
He does.
But you go down through the cast and it's, you know, obviously Bridges headlines it and John Goodman, this feels like the first one. I don't think this is not his first pairing with the Coens though, is it?
No, it's not. He worked with them previously. I forget what it was.
Yeah, I didn't think it was. He'd already kind of been a fixture.
Well, and so that was actually one of the things I was reading. I was doing like going back and reading was early on the Jeff and John were friends before this shoot or whatever. And so Jeff had reached out to John and said, hey, we're getting close to shooting. When are the rewrites coming so I can start learning those lines? And John was like, oh yeah, this is your first Coen Brothers film. No, there are no rewrites. This is like literally this is the script. This is what they've gotten. Yep. And apparently, like, that's very, very true. Like, they don't do a whole lot of allowed any type of improvisation right. in most of their, yes. their movies. And this one, I think all but one line or even one little like utterance is scripted. All the mentions of the dude, the all that is pretty much scripted for them to say. And so like it kind of took Jeff back of what he was just like, oh my goodness, like, all right, so I can just learn this and this is what it gets to go.
Yeah, Bridges had some kind of a nature of riffing a little bit in previous films. You're right. I'd forgotten about that. I just love the fact that Walter is basically a caricature and then not so much of a caricature of John Milius.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The director of, you know, Conan the Barbarian did rewrites on The Hunt for Red October.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Milius like would walk around, I think, the Paramount lot with basically a 45 and was super intimidating, you know, big Second Amendment guy. And I love Milius watching old interviews. He was a character just yeah. a bygone era. So to get, to get a version of him, obviously completely cartoonized in the form of Walter. Mm-hmm. And Walter's my favorite character in the movie.
Yeah.
By well, far. I mean, it just,
I mean, he's one of the most outlandish, and that's saying something for like, he's definitely the craziest when it comes to like, I'm almost like, I was talking to myself. I'm like, I'm actually scared of Walter. Like if oh, I yeah. met, like I would 100% be totally on edge, kind of like your Joe Pesci from yes. Goodfellas, where you're like, you don't you're really right. know what's going to happen. Is he going to pull a gun or is he going to talk about Chavez or is he just going to yeah. be like, okay, like I'm calm. You know, I'm the one who's calm. Yeah. Like, or I forget exactly what he says, but yeah. he's like,
and, but I love the line towards Buscemi where Buscemi he's just like, doesn't understand what they're talking about. And you're out of your element, Donnie.
You're out of your element.
And he says something along the lines of him want like being a small child that wanders into a movie.
Yeah. You ask him a question. He's like, he gets, what is it? Like, so you have no frame of reference. You're like a child that, you know, wanders into the middle yes. of a movie asking questions and just like, oh,
and I've used that in conversation before.
Oh, and I've also used when he looks at Donnie, he's just like, life does not start and stop at your convenience.
Yes. Infinitely quotable. You can work, folks listening to us jabber on, you can work the Big Lebowski easily into everyday conversation.
And if you can't, then obviously you're not a golfer.
Yeah.
Sorry. That one always gets me every single time when he's holding the bowling ball and he's like, obviously it's not a golfer. That which brings me to the point, oh my goodness, the dude's apartment is dirty AF. I'm just telling you right now, when he yeah. was like, when he talks about like, dude, the seat's up, and he puts the seat down and you just see the clean ring. And then this, I'm like, oh, that's so gross.
What would you expect?
I mean, I know, but like, still,
I mean, a 40s, an unemployed 40s bachelor in LA. I mean, it's pretty accurate.
Who just walks around. Oh, oh my goodness. So going back to John Goodman. So it was Barton Fink that he was in with Coen Brothers earlier. That was the one that he had done.
Okay.
But in the article I was reading, it also talked about the fact that the Coen Brothers wrote Walter for him.
Yes.
And actually did, had this actually written or were writing or almost finished with it before Hudsucker Proxy and Fargo. But because of like Roseanne and a couple other things that John was doing, they did those movies first to give him time to get out of that so they could have him be in this. And they kind of did with Jeff too, but Jeff wasn't written for Bridges until like, it wasn't written for Bridges, but when they found out, they were like, oh, well wait for Jeff, he's going to be perfect for it. So the Coen brothers really got their cast that they wanted.
Yeah, they did. And I'm not going to say this is a definitive, but I think you can make a really good argument that in our era, obviously they're one of them's retired. Basically. I can't remember which Coen's Ethan, basically done. Yeah. And I think you're right. But I'm going to make the argument that there may not be a more talented pair of American filmmakers than the Coen brothers. And the reason I say that is because they direct together. One usually gets credited with directing and the other one's uncredited, but they both direct. They both write. They're extraordinary mm-hmm. writers. And they both edit yep. all their movies under a pseudonym, Roderick Janes. And Roderick Janes has been nominated multiple times for Academy Awards for editing. never won multiple nominations. And the only reason they did this is because they didn't want their name showing up so much in the credits. They didn't want edited by Ethan and Joel Cohen. So they just come up with, and there are other directors that, I know Soderbergh's got pseudonyms for both when he serves as his own director of photography and when he edits his own stuff. I forget the names, but Soderbergh's DP pseudonym's a guy. And then when you see a woman's name show up, it's his pseudonym when he edits. So Soderbergh's extremely talented too. I mean, just to be able to wear like three very different hats.
Well, and they're also and producing this too.
Yeah. But the editing, the fact that they edit this stuff is just extraordinary.
Yeah, it is. I mean, just, they have such a focus and such an idea of what they want out of this. Like, obviously the script is written and they want to shoot it word for word. They don't want improvisations. I mean, they may make some adjustments. I haven't worked on the Coen brothers set, so I don't know, but
I think they're pretty rigid.
I'm going to say, yeah, that's pretty much like, let's do this.
Because I've heard, I can't remember the actor or actress, but I've heard other stories of other actors coming on set and being kind of, and they're not mean guys. Like they're great to work with. People love working with the Coen brothers. Javier Bardem famously allowed them to put that terrible haircut on him for No Country because he desperately wanted to work with the Coen brothers. It was like a bucket list kind of thing. But they're very rigid with this. If this is written on the page, this is how we want you to deliver it. Or at least we want you to deliver those lines. I think they're letting great actors do their thing.
Yeah. They want to say
the lines. They're, in many ways, they're more rigid than, certainly more rigid than Christopher Nolan.
Oh yeah.
Which is kind of wild to think about. It's really almost backwards of the way you would think that they would be. Because their movies are so unconventional. That you would think that it's not a rigid process, but it is.
Well, and some of that could be because if it was a conventional shoot, then these people would do what would consider unconventional things to the script or whatever, but then change it to be far more conventional. Like they want things said the way they're said. They want to get across certain things, and certain jokes don't land. Like most of their jokes are very cerebral, like are very much, you got to be listening to pick up what's going on. I mean, there's the one, like the thing, one of the things I laughed at today was just literally like the whole interplay between Julianne Moore and Jeff Bridges when she's asking him if he likes sex or whatever. And he's like, huh? And then he's like sex, coitus, blah, blah, blah. You like it. And he was like, I'm here for a rug. He's like, do you like sex? And he goes, and he responds to, he goes, coitus, you know, and I'm like, if you weren't listening, you know, like, you just, like it's a small bit, but if you're not paying attention, if you're not listening to this, you're gonna miss some of these.
It's
absolute fantastic nuggets of comedy.
It's very verbal. I wouldn't call it analytical comedy, but it's very oral. And I mean, like the line, Mr. Treehorn treats objects like women, man. You know, like they have ways of playing with the English. You're right. It's really specific in the timing, and they have the comedy timing down. Now, I will say not all their comedies always hit. I mean, they've done other comedy films that just didn't, for whatever reason, just didn't land. Famously, the one with Tom Hanks.
Not the Norwegian, like the one that's based off the Norwegian one, The Man Called Otto. They didn't do that, did they?
No. They did The Lady Killers.
The Lady Killers.
The Lady Killers wasn't particularly good.
Wasn't
movie,
funny but, at all. All right. That I've totally forgotten. I was like, I don't think they did The Man Called Otto. But anyways, going on. Even their musical choices are fantastic in this. I love the fact, like, when after Bunny gets, kidnapped, that when the dude gets brought back to Big Lebowski's house or whatever, they have Mozart playing in the background, and he's like, he's in seclusion in the West Wing, you know, and he walks back and like, and you have that like really epic Mozart music. I'm just like, it's perfect. Like, it's so over the top, but it feels so right in it. Like, this is exactly what's going to happen. It's just so great. Oh my goodness. So apparently this did not hit the audiences very well, so it didn't do that great. So the budget was about $15 million, All told worldwide, it was like $46 million that it took home. Only $18 million in the U.S. So it barely went above its budget. Let's not even talk about its marketing budget. So, but of course, we don't really know what that is or how it was marketed. But
yeah, I couldn't even tell you if I remember any marketing for this in 98. I was in high school, so I wasn't the target market for
the Big Lebowski. You and I definitely were not.
But little did we know, just a few short years later, it would be a fixture.
It would be. Well, I mean, it's just stuff to live by. The dude abides, and the dude makes drinks. That's all he does. He just walks around people's houses when he gets invited. And he's like, oh, there's a bar over there. And
like, well, as long as it's a white Russian.
Exactly. Or Caucasian, as he also called it, too.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Not a great drink. I used to drink those when I was younger. And yeah, the dairy. Yeah, one is fine.
Like, I don't know how he did so many.
Likes his lactose. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments is when he went to Julianne Moore's apartment. What's his face? The guy, the British guy from, he's also in Harry Potter. He's a bunch of different stuff or whatever. He's sitting there like the musician or something or artist. Anyways, he's kind of like, he's European, or he's just sitting there reading a magazine, just kind of laughing. And he's like, would you like a drink? And then Jeff Bridges sits down. He's like, yeah, white Russian. He goes, the bar's over there. But he was also the guy that like as they're talking, he laughs and then he picks up the phone and he's talking to someone. And he's just like, Julianne, you need to get on the phone. And they both start just cackling. And Jeff is just standing there going, what's going on? I'm like, all right, I got to leave. I got to go see a doctor.
That's reminiscent of like every other L.A. party.
Yeah.
It's like we're just divergent groups of people.
Just that, me.
Yeah. That normally wouldn't ever hang out.
No. Yeah. Now, the great thing is this was shot by Roger Deakins.
Yes, it was.
Your fave.
Yeah.
Your fave. I mean, he does a lot of the Coen Brothers stuff. So
most of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most, if not, I don't know about all, it's close to all of them, but it's the vast majority lensed by Deakins.
And this, of course, looks fantastic.
It does. Always. It does. It's because it's a comedy, you kind of take the image for granted. It's not really anything that you're actively typically thinking about. Although there's some cool stuff when they go to Treehorn's and the beach, you know, and you have the classic Deacon silhouette lighting with lit by fire, which he loves to do. And I almost think that directors are just writing sequences knowing how well he shoots silhouette, that they're just like, or they just pick that the scene was a nondescript time of day. And then they're like, wait, this will look good if Roger silhouettes it with firelight. Yeah. Done. By the way, I still love that. I laugh out loud every freaking time that he's at Treehorn's in that amazing house with the sketch. Every damn time he's scribbling over there when he's on the phone, hangs up, and then he etches it. I'm juvenile in that moment. I might as well be 15 in it. I laugh every single time.
Oh my goodness. And then it's not even like that much further along. He's at the Malibu police station, you know, having run through the or whatever. And he gets that coffee cup thrown at his head. Like, I like, it's so out of the blue every time. Like, I know it's coming, but every time I'm just like, oh my goodness. And then it hits him and I just start busting out laughing. Oh, it's the best. It is the best.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And I mean, we haven't even talked about Totoro. So,
I mean,
like, let's just be honest. He's the one who, like, he steals the show.
He every does. Time he's seen steals everything. If you watch the beginning of the movie and you're in the, you know, you're in the bowling alley and Walter's talking all his nonsense about National Socialism and the like, and observing the Sabbath and
Shomer Shabbos.
Yeah. You would think that he's the most extreme character in the movie, but oh no, no, it's Totoro as Jesus. And he is, he's the perfect foil to Walter.
Oh yeah, he is.
Yeah. 8-year-olds
do. Don't go flashing that piece.
You flash that piece on the lanes again. We all know the rest.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, this is definitely not, if you are uncomfortable with cursing, this is not the movie for you.
Yeah, I don't know what the F-bomb count is on this, but it's
pretty high.
It's amongst it's the high. Highest, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, which there's probably either a lot of bleeps or a lot of blockouts from the TV version, but one, I think the thing that I read and I think is hilarious on the TV version is the scene where John Goodman's, you know, busting up the car and he keeps saying saying,
oh my god,
it's like, this is what happens when, so the TV version, they don't actually bleep it out. They dubbed it. It's like,
yes,
it's like, this is what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps. And I was like,
yes. What? So like, what the great, heck? Yeah. The great story about that is that they were super, everybody was super ticked off that that was going to be edited, edited out. And in fact, the preference was, well, why don't you just edit it out? Like, just get rid of it, right? If you're not, it's not acceptable for broadcast, just cut it. But the networks were insistent, no. And so when they went to ADR it, that's what they put.
So
just purposefully, make it as ridiculous as possible.
This is what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps.
It just became absurdist at that point. It was like, well, no, we're not going to spend a bunch of effort in trying to figure out why this, what's great is it makes it even funnier.
Yeah.
That's an already funny scene. Yeah,
it is. And then just actually the ridiculousness of it. And it doesn't, you know, I wouldn't put it past Walter saying something crazy like that. There's not a bad performance. There's not a, nobody, like even Flea, who's in it for all of 5 seconds, when, you know, more than that, but
Nihilist number two.
That sounds exhausting. Yeah. Even Flea, I mean, like nobody brings in a bad, you know,
they don't. Here. I mean, this is probably, you know, she's not in it that much, but Tara Reid even gives a great performance as Bunny.
Yeah. Just
on the whole exchange, I won't quote it, but the whole exchange with her poolside when the dude first.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Brant just like, oh, isn't that marvelous?
Brant can't stay. Right? Brant can watch. He's going to pay me $100. He's like,
how do they keep a straight face shooting scenes like this?
I don't know. There's so many good parts. Like,
how many takes would it have taken? I mean, and they were shooting film, you know, how much 35 millimeter film did they burn through with people breaking?
I mean,
during filming,
just the three guys, Steve Buscemi and John Goodman and Jeff Bridges, like all of their scenes, anytime the three of them together, like something crazy is happening. Something funny is being said. How do you keep it? Like the whole, like, because, you know, when he's like, oh, and what Lennon said, and, you know, then of course, Donnie comes in. He's just like, I am the walrus. Yeah. I am the walrus. I am the walrus. Oh, Vladimir, give it up. Hurry up.
And even Donnie after that's still like, what the F is he talking about?
Walter hated Donnie, like watching through, like absolutely did not like him at all. Makes him sit in the car when they go to Larry Sellers. Remember, like, so like when he goes to like confront the 15-year-old kid with the thing or whatever, they made Donnie sit in the car.
The guys in the iron lung. Yeah.
But then of course, then he goes out and starts, you know, John Goodman starts bashing in the car and the neighbor comes in, starts bashing in the car. You just see, you see Donnie like trying to like hightail it out of the car. Like, oh my goodness, what's going on? Oh, there's something, like, it's just small bits. It's great dialogue that makes this movie just kind of work in so many levels. And I think some of that was like, I had to kind of get to a point where I could appreciate it and kind of really understand it and really kind of get some of these jokes. And I think that's where it took. And it
does move at a mile a minute. It's very unforgiving in that regard. It demands a high level of audience intelligence.
Mm-hmm. And
it really does. Nothing is spoon fed in a Coen Brothers film. They're not going to do that.
Nope.
I was watching it's another podcast on like kind of the state of media. And they were talking about how now when they pitch these shows on streaming, during the pitch, they will ask them, and there's a term for it that I'm forgetting, but they'll basically ask them, is your script set up enough where main story points are repeated enough to compete with the phone that's in the hand of the viewer?
Oh.
And I was like, oh, you gotta be kidding
me. That's terrible.
It is, but that's where they're at. They're assuming, incorrectly, mind you, but they're assuming that you have a split viewer attention with the phone. Good luck doing that with this or any other Coen Brothers film. Mm, like you're going to have to pay attention. It forces you, but man, are you rewarded for doing so? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You're going to laugh more. You're going to enjoy it more. You have to pay attention. And thankfully the sound mix in a Coen film is just fine.
No, you don't have to put subtitles on unless you're really trying to catch that joke.
They're definitely not attempting the experimental filmmaking method of cutting dialogue.
Yeah, no, not at all.
I wouldn't say they're as dialogue heavy as a Sorkin script, but they're on the heavier end.
And you do need to pay attention like a Sorkin script to be able to get some of those jokes or those bits.
It's rapid fire. I mean, like the whole exchange between Walter and the dude, where the dude's just giving him crap for continuing to observe all these Jewish practices, even though he had been divorced for like 5 years. But Walter's culminating quote is amazing. 3,000 years of beautiful tradition from Moses to Sandy Koufax. That writing is superb.
Yeah. It's
absolutely superb.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back to something you said, because I'm still kind of mulling it over, where you feel like Tarantino films and this are in the same vein. And my gut reaction, because that's the first time I've ever heard you say this, my gut reaction was to say, absolutely disagree with you completely.
Which is fine.
Like, wait, no. And that's why I was like, I'm going to let it sit. And I still don't fully agree with you. I think there's a lot of similarities, I think what you're getting at. I think it's much more of like, I feel like Tarantino's are definitely more drama or action based with some comedy thrown in, where this is far more of like comedy, you know. And I think you were saying that a lot with the act, with one going more action.
And what they have in common is this is more of the setting.
More of the setting. And I think some of the dialogue, I mean, because a lot of with Tarantino, you also have to pay attention. Like you can't just kind of be on your phone and watch a Tarantino film and then kind of, you won't know what's going on or you won't know missing.
And Tarantino's obviously famous for where like characters just mid scene will just be in a debate about something innocuous.
Yep.
Like who has the better food and this movie does similar things where they're just having kind of standard conversations that mm-hmm. don't seem to show up in a lot of movies.
Yep.
It seems to be only these offbeat kind of deals where that stuff starts to show up, like people just debating, which is what we really do. It's very true to life.
Yeah.
And then obviously Walter's insistence on connecting everything to Vietnam.
Hey man, he did not watch his friends die face first in the muck.
But isn't that human nature that mm-hmm. like whatever your big like culminating event in your life is, you just seem to try to want to tie everything back to it. Yeah. Like it's so.
Some people, yeah, that, their semester studying abroad.
They planted that joke early in the movie and they keep peppering it in and in and in until the punchline. And the punchline's the freaking Donnie's ashes flowing on the dude's face. And Walter just not being able to understand how to deal with this.
No.
And just launches back into Vietnam. And it's like the dude's put up with it all the whole way through. And it's like, no, I'm not dealing with this anymore. Like, what is the matter with you?
I'm going to let you have it. This is me yelling at you, telling you.
And that's it's a fun moment. It's kind of an endearing moment too, because Walter is like brought down like 10, 12 notches. Like the character finally has some, like a moment of self-reflection there during that scene. And it's just like, even kind of admits is like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of an arc for Walter. It's very minimal.
Very minimal arc. Very minimal.
And so, the dude really doesn't have one.
No. I mean, he is kind of just the catalyst that kind of allows all these other people to have their arcs or to have their changes and things.
He's the middle-aged slacker Ferris Bueller.
Yeah. He's the surfer dude. He's just the, you know, surfer dude.
Yeah. The world, you know, they set it up properly. The world just seems to, for whatever reason, revolve around him.
Yep.
And he just is.
And Jeff Bridges is the dude in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, he totally, it took me a long time to really kind of come to terms with that like he wasn't like really that much different.
No. Well, he joked when they offered him the role and he read the script, he was like, were you guys friends of mine in the 70s? And like when growing up or whatever, and he's just like, what's going on? But so much so, actually, Luke was reading this, a little bit of trivia, is that the majority of the dude's costumes are actually Jeff Bridges' real clothes, including the Jellies sandals that he has.
Oh, my gosh.
Those are his. Jellies. And apparently he still has them. Like, he talks about them. Like,
oh, that's incredible. That's incredible. The way the Coens work in, like, just regular L.A. Hollywood stuff, like,
yeah.
Like the real innocuous conversation I'm just looking at here where they're talking about that where this guy lives in North Hollywood, like near the In-N-Out Burger.
It's like, well, no, the
Donnie's burger. Like, those are good burgers, Walter. Shut the Donnie.
Well, I love that they make a joke. He's like, well, no, the In-N-Out Burger's on whatever, like a couple of years. He's like, well, like, I said near the In-N-Out Burger. Near
the In-N-Out Burger. Those are good burgers. Yeah, Donnie's just always interjecting, like always just... Which is hilarious because to look back now and just know how accomplished an actor Buscemi is.
Oh, yeah.
That he just plays the dimwit so well.
Yeah.
So well. He makes it look easy and it's anything but.
Another fun fact. The entire movie, the dude never rolls a bowl. Like, he never bowls. He's always in the bowling alley, but he never actually bowls.
Do you think that's on purpose?
Probably. I mean, I would think it's just kind of like, I mean, because it's not something you would think about. Like, I didn't really notice until, like, again, I read this article or whatever, and they were talking about that. And I was like, he doesn't, does he? And no. Like going back and thinking
he gets bowled in that trip he has.
Yeah, exactly. But no, he never bowls. Donnie does. Like, he starts off bowling. I don't know if Walter ever does either, but. Oh, the fact that he listens to the, like, championship bowling, like, on his headphones.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Like, absolutely just ridiculous. Absolutely just ridiculous.
Yeah. There's obviously the number of bowling films is short, but this is certainly number one.
Yeah.
It's basically this and
Kingpin.
Kingpin. Kingpin's fun, but
yeah,
it's got nothing on Lebowski.
No, not in the least.
Yeah, I just love the whole subculture in this film, kind of everyday, non-glamorous LA kind of intersects with, you know, the wealthy. And then you have the adult film industry, which is very prevalent in the Valley. It's hysterical. Yeah. If there's a list of rewatchable movies, this is probably
just because you're going to catch more stuff every time you watch it. I mean, and there's so many good quotable lines. I mean, and not even good quotable lines, just good lines that, like, I was just thinking about the one where she starts showing him log jamming the porno that Bunny's in or whatever. and of course, what's his face is like supposed to be there to fix the cable or whatever. And and then, of course, the topless roommate comes in. And of course, then Julianne Moore turns it off. Goes, and, you can guess where it goes from there. And he just goes, he fixes the cable. Just like. So quick. I mean, for being a down and out guy, unemployed, he's so quick.
Well, I forgot all about the fact that I'm just now remembering that you were talking about him with the Malibu police chief when he gets hit in the head.
Yeah.
And it's because the chief goes on this long rant and then he's like, there's this pause and the dude's like, I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Okay.
I think we did a good job trying to not make this a quote festival.
Yeah.
But it's super hard to do. That's what this movie is. That's what it is.
Well, that's all I've got to say about this. So except for The Dude Abides.
The Dude Abides. It's one of the best.
It is. It is.
It's
I don't know if it's my favorite Coen Brothers movie, but it's one of them. Like, it's hard to, like, because I think No Country is so fantastic and done so well.
I try not to compare them. I mean,
well, they're so different. You know, obviously, one's definitely a drama.
And I really like Miller's Crossing as well. We didn't mention that one. This is one of the first Coens I saw along with Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Mm-hmm. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is the first one I saw in a theater. Oh. And then I started going into their back catalog.
And seeing all that stuff.
Yeah, and really enjoyed Miller's Crossing. And yeah, they're tremendous.
Yeah.
Not very many misses. There's a few, but generally, generally speaking, they pretty much knock it out of the park every mm-hmm. time. Yeah. I've got nothing but great things to say about them as filmmakers. They are among my favorite ever.
All right. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening to us today. We really appreciate it. Hopefully you enjoyed The Big Lebowski, or if you haven't seen the movie, this makes you want to go see it. And all we ask is after you see it, find someone who's also watched it, chat about it. Get your own thoughts. Maybe you disagree with us. Maybe you don't like the Coen Brothers movie. Maybe you need to watch it 6 or 7 times to enjoy it like some people on this podcast. So I don't know. Maybe that's possible. Anyway, so however you're hearing this, either watching us on YouTube, our YouTube channel, or listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, we thank you so much. Feel free to subscribe, like, leave a review. Hey, throw us a comment with a movie that a recommendation you'd want us to talk about. We're definitely taking those. So, but we appreciate everybody, and you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, everybody.